He unleashed an all-out assault on our institutions of our democracy from the outset.
President Trump, the focus of last week's mob assault. It's Monday, January 11th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Follow us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, reverberations ripple through the United States. The world continues to react. Less freedom of expression in Vietnam. Containing coronavirus and new tech on display. It's all on today's VOA Asia. In a video released late last week, President Donald Trump said he is outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem that transpired when his supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol. Trump is facing a growing call from Democrats and Republicans who say he must be removed from office. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Sawara reports.
With scenes of his supporters violently storming into the U.S. Capitol fresh in mind, Thursday night President Donald Trump released a video addressing the attack.
Like all Americans, I am outraged by the violence, lawlessness, and mayhem.
Trump acknowledged that Congress has certified the election result, but did not congratulate President-elect Joe Biden, as is the norm in a concession speech.
My focus now turns to ensuring a smooth, orderly, and seamless transition of power.
Earlier Thursday, Biden delivered another sharp rebuke of Trump.
He unleashed an all-out assault on our institutions of our democracy from the outset. And yesterday was but the culmination of that unrelenting attack.
Biden did not address the growing calls to remove Trump from office for inciting mob violence, including from presumptive Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who are pushing to invoke the 25th Amendment.
By inciting sedition, as he did yesterday, he must be removed from office. While it's only 13 days left, any day can be a horror show for America.
Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger also called for Trump's ousting.
All indications are that the president has become unmoored, not just from his duty, nor even his oath, but from reality itself.
The 25th Amendment allows the removal of a president who is unable to discharge the powers and duties through a vote by the vice president and a majority of the cabinet. Neither Vice President Mike Pence nor any cabinet member has publicly supported the move.
With the remaining time, I think there would be some obstacles, both practical and legal, to doing it. So it could be done, but it would be very hard to do.
Meanwhile, a federal prosecutor investigating the riot has said he would press charges against anyone inciting it, potentially including Trump, who told supporters to march to Congress to press lawmakers to block certification of Biden's victory. For months, he has said he can only lose if the election is rigged.
The images are shocking and sad, and I think the unfortunate but somewhat predictable conclusion of the president's denigration of democracy.
Pelosi said that if Pence won't invoke the 25th Amendment, the House would consider impeaching Trump again. He was impeached in late 2019, but acquitted by the Senate in February 2020. Patsy Whitaker-Sawara, VOA News.
The story continues to evolve as lawmakers are calling for a second impeachment of President Trump and for his resignation. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. Also get the very latest on Facebook at VOA Asia. And of course, you can always visit our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. U.S. State Department ends restrictions on contacts with Taiwan officials. Australia, United States, and U.K., Canada criticize Hong Kong mass arrests. Roadside bomb, airstrike kill 15 people in Afghanistan. Taliban see Ghani as obstacle to Afghan peace. Power breakdown plunges Pakistan into darkness. Expanded coverage of all these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as our website. That's voanews.com. We continue now with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Politically motivated mob violence in Washington, D.C. has sent a shockwave throughout the country, where Americans continue to grapple with the assault on the U.S. Capitol building and what it means for the country moving forward. VOA's Kane Faribault has more from the Midwestern state of Illinois.
Scrolling through news websites on his home office computer, Kent Redfield, a former Illinois state government employee and retired professor, couldn't believe what he was watching unfold at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th.
This was an attack on the legitimacy and authority of government and the rule of law. And so it was just stunning. It really was disbelief and very difficult to get your head around.
Amid heightened security, activity at the Illinois State Capitol building in Springfield, where Redfield once worked, was noticeably quiet in the days following the riot at the U.S. Capitol. The implications of the attack increased Redfield's anxiety.
A really serious terrorist attack could have crippled the United States government. When those sorts of things started to sink in and the pictures of the representatives sheltering in the galleries and stuff, the gravity of it started to hit you.
Kirkwood, Illinois farmer Wendell Shawman watched the lawlessness at the U.S. Capitol unfold on his living room television.
I don't think we know the full story yet. Whether this was all Trump supporters that really stirred this up or whether there's somebody else that took advantage of the opportunity to really raise havoc, raise hell, I don't know. I think that time will tell on that, hopefully.
Recent events and President Donald Trump's role in them, including his rejection of the presidential election results, have Shawman reevaluating his support for the man he voted for in 2016 and 2020.
It's certainly gone down. You can't discount what he did over the 4 years. I think the country, for the large part, is better off for it. He did not leave gracefully.
It must admit, I would worry that we're coming to the end of what I'll call democratic principles that we've understood and taken for granted for most of my life.
Longtime Illinois bookseller John Paul has a deep appreciation for history. His bookstore, Prairie Archives, is near the old Capitol building in Springfield, where in 1858, former President Abraham Lincoln delivered his famous House Divided speech. The address explored America's deep division over the wrongs of slavery ahead of the U.S. Civil War. John Paul believes Lincoln would mourn the current political divide in a union so many gave their lives to preserve.
Well, I'm reasonably convinced that he would be extremely shocked. Throughout the entire political history of the United States, we've never had issues that were like this. So,
Paul hopes a sense of national unity can be rekindled by President-elect Joe Biden, who appeared in front of Paul's bookshop when then-presidential candidate Barack Obama introduced him as his running mate in 2008. Paul says much has changed during the 12 years since, and he worries about damage done to the credibility of the U.S. election process and whether Biden can effectively govern a politically fractured nation.
The extreme right wing is going to reject any sense that Biden is a legitimate president, and this is just going to make his job much more difficult in trying to convince the public that he is and that he's trying to work on their behalf. All we can hope for is that it doesn't stay the same way that it is.
Paul's hopes will be put to the test beginning January 20th, when Trump departs the White House and Biden takes the oath of office to become president. Kane Faribault, VOA News, Springfield, Illinois.
Happening now in Asia, Indonesian aviation authorities said Sunday they had located the two black boxes from the Sriwijaya Air passenger plane that crashed shortly after takeoff from Jakarta Saturday. The devices contain recordings and flight data that could help officials understand why the Boeing 737-500 with 62 people on board crashed. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us as we begin a brand new week together on VOA Asia. Many world leaders have expressed shock and dismay at the riots in Washington last week that resulted in at least 5 deaths and dozens of arrests. Supporters of U.S. President Donald Trump marched on Capitol Hill after Trump called for protests against the victory of his rival Joe Biden in November's election. U.S. courts have repeatedly rejected Trump's claim that the vote was rigged. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
European allies watched with dismay as the violence unfolded at the U.S. Capitol.
What happened in Washington, D.C. is not America. Definitely.
This democracy is stronger than the attackers and the rioters.
On Twitter, Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson called the violence disgraceful. His Interior Minister Priti Patel blamed President Donald Trump.
His comments directly led to the violence, and so far he's failed to condemn that violence, and that is completely wrong.
NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg tweeted, "Shocking scenes in Washington, D.C. The outcome of this democratic election must be respected." A spokesman for the United Nations Secretary General said, "It is important that political leaders impress on their followers the need to refrain from violence." Israel's leader expressed support for his country's chief ally.
"American democracy has always inspired me. Lawlessness and violence are the opposite of the values we know Americans and Israelis cherish."
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi wrote on Twitter, "The democratic process cannot be allowed to be subverted through unlawful protests." Meanwhile, U.S. rivals taunted Washington. In a televised speech, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said it showed how fragile and vulnerable Western democracy is. In a statement, Venezuela said the United States is suffering the same thing that it has generated in other countries with its policies of aggression. China attempted to twist the narrative.
"The mainstream media in the United States have unanimously condemned this as a violent incident, using words like thugs, extremists, villains, and disgrace. However, what words did they use to describe the violent protesters in Hong Kong? They said it was a beautiful sight and profiled violent protesters as democratic heroes and said that the American people stand with them."
Moscow's deputy UN ambassador, Dmitry Polyansky, compared the violence to the 2014 revolution in Ukraine, writing on Twitter, "Quite Maidan-style pictures are coming from D.C. U.S. allies share the pain of many Americans watching the violence at the heart of its democracy. Many foes are using the events as an opportunity to settle scores. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Millman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Indonesian officials say at least 11 people are dead, 18 others injured in back-to-back landslides in West Java late Saturday. Search and rescue workers are among the dead. Saturday's heavy rain triggered the landslides. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Our program continues. You're listening to VOA Asia. United Nations human rights bodies accuse Vietnam of violating the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights by clamping down on freedom and expression and denying critics due process and a fair trial. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The sentences given to three independent journalists earlier this week are the latest example of a further erosion of freedom of expression in Vietnam. The men were found guilty of national security offenses and sentenced to up to 15 years imprisonment. UN Human Rights spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says an increasing number of independent journalists, bloggers, online commentators, and human rights defenders are being arbitrarily detained based on vaguely defined laws. In the case of the recently sentenced journalists, she says all three were held in lengthy pretrial detention. She adds there are serious concerns their right to a fair trial was not respected.
Many of them are kept effectively incommunicado in detention. They do not have access to their families. They also do not have access to lawyers. In other cases, we do have indication of ill treatment, and we also have indications that there are individuals who have medical needs whose needs are not taken into account.
Shandasani also expresses concerns that individuals who try to cooperate with the UN's human rights bodies are subjected to intimidation and reprisals. She says that effectively inhibits them from cooperating with the UN and sharing information about human rights issues.
The kinds of reprisals and intimidation that they face can include just harassment, travel bans, loss of employment, physical attacks, as well as arbitrary arrest, detention, and torture. So it's very important for us to raise the alarm on this.
Shamdasani says the UN Human Rights Office continues to raise those cases with the Vietnamese government, urging it to stop criminally charging people for expressing the right of freedom of expression. She adds people should be able to exercise their fundamental rights without fear of reprisals. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The United States is lifting self-imposed restrictions on contacts between U.S. officials and their Taiwanese counterparts while maintaining the unofficial relationship between the two democracies. The latest move is welcomed by Taiwan but is angering China. Some analysts said it's the right move but question the timing. There's much more on this story on our website at voanews.com. Malaysia is drawing up dozens of charges against a rubber glove maker supplying the United States and other countries after labor inspectors found the firm's migrant workers living in squalid, congested conditions. A surge in global demand for personal protective gear has drawn international attention to the migrants. Malaysia churns out nearly two of every three pairs of gloves worldwide. There's more on Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, countries around the world are scrambling to contain new coronavirus surges as cases worldwide top 88.2 million people. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on measures that some countries are taking to keep the virus from spreading further.
Japan declared a state of emergency in Tokyo and three nearby areas this week as coronavirus cases continue to surge, hitting a daily record of nearly 2,500 in the capital. Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga says emergency measures will last a month.
Since the New Year holiday, infection cases have been extremely high and the situation has become very severe.
Authorities aim to start a vaccination campaign by the end of February. Reaction in Tokyo is mixed.
I favor it. If we don't declare a state of emergency, we cannot stop people from going out.
I work for an IT firm, so we often go out drinking after 8 p.m. and consult each other about work. I don't know where to do that now. I'm in trouble.
COVID-19 is surging far beyond Asia. Lebanon is under a 25-day nationwide lockdown. The small nation hit a new single-day infection record for the third straight day Thursday with nearly 4,800 cases. The pandemic is adding misery to an unprecedented economic and financial crisis that triggered a debt default and sent its local currency plunging, losing 80% of its value to the dollar. In Africa, Senegalese President Macky Sall declared a state of emergency and imposed a curfew in two of the nation's most affected cities, Dakar and Thiès, where he says 90% of the country's coronavirus cases are concentrated. Many say even stronger measures are needed.
I don't see the point of having a 9 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew because people circulate more in the morning and have more contact in the morning, in the buses, on the sidewalks. People are going out but do not wear masks and do not respect anything at all. I think it should be much stricter.
It is not good because we have to stop working earlier. But that's the solution. That is what protects us and protects our family.
Around the world, the number of confirmed coronavirus infections now tops 88.2 million, according to Johns Hopkins University. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
As a major showcase for the latest innovations in consumer technology, The Consumer Electronics Show typically draws over 170,000 attendees from all over the world. Of course, this year is a bit different, and the show is going all digital for the first time in its history. Seems appropriate. VOA's Tina Trin reports.
At the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, better known as CES, you never knew what amazing new technology you might discover. But one thing you could always count on were the crowds.
Last year, we had just over 170,000 attendees from across the globe.
This year, around 100,000 have pre-registered and will be heading to the show via their laptops and computers.
We knew that it really wasn't feasible to do a live event in any shape or form. We just couldn't do anything safely.
Gene Foster is Senior Vice President at the Consumer Technology Association, which organizes CES.
There's a lot of platforms out there that try to replicate the physical world online, and we really were not looking to do that. We said, you know, how do you really engage your audiences?
To help attendees sort through the dizzying array of exhibitors, organizers have set up a virtual anchor desk.
They're going to run through the entire show, and that's going to be a resource for our audiences to go and say, okay, what's the latest news? What was announced? What are the upcoming sessions?
And just as it's had a role in this year's new format, the pandemic has also spurred innovations in healthcare, streaming, 5G, and artificial intelligence.
You're going to see more about the technologies that are enabling, you know, companies to transform their business digitally.
Over 1,800 exhibitors will take part in a digital showcase, down from about 4,000 last year. Nearly half are from outside the U.S. To find them, attendees can search by their country, technology, or name.
You can join in live sessions. It could be product demos. It could be thought leadership sessions.
Visitors will also be able to chat one-on-one with company representatives.
You can request a meeting, and you can start a meeting right away. So there's that real opportunity for you to collaborate with these global companies.
A virtual CES may not offer the sizzle of the usual big meetup in Las Vegas, but tech innovations will entice industry insiders and observers from around the world. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
With all of the technology available in the world, people are finding creative uses for it. A smartphone app that combines computer vision with a host of experts is now empowering nature enthusiasts across the globe to document organisms that are around them. Matt Dibble takes a closer look.
Kat Chang is an urban designer, but in her spare time, she likes to examine other life forms.
Ever since I was a little girl, I've been interested in the natural world. We're Native Hawaiian, our family, and my grandmother would take me around her yard. She would show us all the plants and how you use them. And later, when I was interested in learning about fungi, I didn't have anybody to help me with it. Someone suggested iNaturalist to me, and it's on your cell phone.
iNaturalist is a joint initiative of National Geographic and the California Academy of Sciences.
Essentially, people can take a photo of anything living, plant, animal, fungus, slime mold, put it on the website, and other people will identify it.
The app compares the image with those already in the database to begin the identification process. But ultimately, human experts weigh in.
The best part of it is there's a community of people that can also participate.
It's used by scientists to collect data and actually write papers, as well as just amateur people who are really interested in getting more involved and caring more about nature.
This time of year, I'm particularly looking for salamanders.
Oh, there he is, poking out of the wood I pulled up.
And I always like to see mammals. They're one of my favorites, and birds, of course. I have almost 55,000 observations. Yeah, I use it a lot.
iNaturalist has observations from every country in the world. Right now, I believe we have over 26 million observations and about 700,000 active users.
This collaboration across continents led recently to a surprising discovery in California, a type of giant sunfish whose normal habitat is thousands of miles to the south. An indication, perhaps, of a rapidly changing world. Matt Dibble for VOA News, San Francisco, California.
That's our program for today. We're so happy that you were able to join us for today's edition of VOA Asia. Come back again tomorrow. In the meantime, you can follow us online. We're on Twitter at VOA Asia. And just look us up under that same name on Instagram, YouTube, and of course, Facebook. You can find our full-length 25-minute programs anytime you like at our website, voanews.com. We also like to thank our team that helps bring you this program every day, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Amy Heibels, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful start to your week. Be safe. Be well.